Time now for music. Famous last words, even when they're not particularly profound, often sound poetic anyway. Oscar Wilde hated the wallpaper in the room where he died. As his body wore out, he looked at that wallpaper and he muttered, "One of us has to go." Salvador Dali whispered, "Where's my clock?" Steve Jobs, "Oh wow, oh wow, oh wow." Writer and composer Jan Swofford was thinking about these and other last words recently, and he began to think about the last works of famous classical composers, and he wrote about it in Slate magazine. Now, like last words, he says, a final composition can be desperate, manic, indulgent, and reverent, sometimes all at once, and it often reveals something new about the life of its composer. Take perhaps the most widely known last work. Mozart's Requiem.
One of the things that's interesting is that composers of his era, Haydn and Mozart particularly, were really more into lighthearted things than tragic things. Mozart's operas, which are basically sex comedies, are generally more popular and more highly regarded than his religious music. And tragedy wasn't really his style. Except when he happened to be dying at the time, he wrote one of the great tragic pieces of all time, Requiem, and that opening, which is the most famous part of it, I've always said is like music of a man staring in his own grave.
You also write about Beethoven. You say that he felt death at his shoulder. Which means what?
I think for years, he was very, very ill a great deal of the time, and he had had several near bouts with death from illness, starting in middle age.
So what we're hearing here is the first movement of Beethoven's Piano Sonata 110, which, Janet, sounds almost childlike, sort of tender.
Well, Beethoven in his last music got more simple and more complex, more crazy and more ethereal, more everything. He pushed every envelope in every direction. Seems so simple, but nobody else ever did anything like this.
And it sounds so completely unlike another late piece of his, which was the Grosse Fuge. Lynn, let's hear some of that.
The Grosse Fuge, it was the original finale of the Opus 130 string quartet, which to me is partly intended to be a study in dissociation. I've had a couple of students giving presentations on that piece, and both of them seemed to almost be having a nervous breakdown when they were trying to talk about it. Just one of the wildest, most obsessive and relentless pieces ever written.
Critics called it indecipherable, like listening to Chinese.
And of course it was his favorite movement. He actually, because he was deaf, didn't go to the premiere. He waited in a bar for friends to come and find out what. They came in and he asked, first of all, how did the fugue go? And they said, oh, it didn't go that well. And he exploded, asses, cattle. The last thing Beethoven said, as far as we know, is applaud, friends, the comedy is over, which is an old tag from Roman comedy. The last thing he did, after he'd been in a coma for a couple of days, there was a crack of thunder outside, and he raised up, shaking his fist at the sky, and fell back dead, which was, if it's true, perfectly Beethovenian.
Jan, you also write about Franz Schubert, who was a torchbearer at Beethoven's funeral. He died just a year after Beethoven died in 1827. Describe Schubert's last days.
Schubert, I think of all the composers, really saw it coming because he had syphilis. You know, his hair had fallen out and the whole second stage. It was not actually syphilis that killed him at age 32. He died of typhus, but he'd probably been weakened. He knew he was doomed to a very unpleasant death.
Yeah, and you hear that kind of forlorn joy in this piano sonata. This is in B-flat. When did he write this?
He wrote in the last year of his life when he wrote some of his most remarkable pieces, and you're about to hear this little trill in the bass, followed by this melody resuming as if nothing had happened, this beautiful, delicate melody. And I feel that for Schubert, at the end of his life, that music itself became a symbol of life. And it's as if he's looking at music from outside life, like a person who loves parties but can't go to parties anymore and can only look at them from outside the window.
My guest is composer and writer Jan Swofford, who's written about the late or final works of some of the famous classical composers. Of all the composers you write about, the one who seemed to be most at peace with his death was Bach, even though he was in great pain, right?
Yeah, he was in bed, blind. He'd been devastated with cramps in his hands. He had a bad eye operation. He was in bad shape, though he'd been healthy most of his life. So he had a friend of his play a chorale prelude for him that he'd written earlier, a very serene piece. And it was called At the Time When We Are in Greatest Distress, but he renamed it Before Thy Throne I Stand, and made some revisions in it. Bach was a lifelong perfectionist. Even on his deathbed, blind and in pain, he couldn't help making some changes and some improvements in the piece. And he renamed it Before Thy Throne I Stand because I think it was his calling card to God.
Absolutely breathtaking. I mean, it's as if Bach's eyes are closing right in front of us, those last chords.
I'm sure the Lord appreciated it.
He really knew.
Yeah, and he was not afraid. He was very much a believer and felt that he had done his gig well, and he was ready to go.
Let me ask you about Béla Bartók. He was a European refugee. He died in Manhattan in 1945, where he lived as a poor man for many years.
In the U.S., he did. He'd fled the Nazis from his native Hungary. He was quite sick. He had leukemia. Bartók was trying to finish the third piano concerto as a legacy for his wife, who was a concert pianist. It's one of the most beautiful, delightful, popularistic pieces he ever wrote. He was almost to the end of it when the ambulance arrived, and they almost had to drag him away from his desk under protest. And he never quite finished scoring the last 17 bars of the piece.
What do you think, Jan, about your own work when you hear these final pieces?
I wish it were as good as that. You know, there's the whole question of why do this? If you're suffering and you're on your deathbed, why write? And I think the answer is, and I say this as a composer, There's nothing better to do with your time while you're dying. And if it's a farewell to life, that's one thing, but there's also, you go out doing what you do.
That's Jan Swofford. He's a writer, composer, and teacher at the Boston Conservatory. He's also a contributor for Slate Magazine, where he wrote about classical composers' final works. Jan Swofford, thank you so much.
Guy, thanks. It's great.
And for Sunday, that's Weekends and All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz. Check out our weekly podcast, The Best of Weekends and All Things Considered. You can find it at iTunes or at npr.org/weekendATC. We post a new episode every Sunday night. We're back with more news, stories, books, and music next weekend. Until then, thanks for listening, and have a great week.